I'm Katie Kempner, and welcome to Perspectives, which is a series of inspiring conversations with remarkable working women. And I am so excited to be talking with my good friend Jennifer Frommer today. She's SVP Partnerships and Creative Content, Columbia Records, Sony Music. That's a big title. So we have known each other now for a long time, and you've had such an incredible career and have such an incredible career. Could we start by just talking a little bit about your path up until your current position?
I've started out, I always wanted to work in the music industry, and I am a musician. And when I was a kid, I fancied myself as a female Bruce Springsteen, which I really wasn't, but that's what I wanted to be. So all through high school, college, I knew that I wanted to work in music. And after graduation, I tried to get a job in the music industry. It didn't pan out in the beginning. So I started my career in advertising, which I loved so much. And I started at DDB, worked with David Angelo, who's become a very famous pundit in the ad space. And I, from there, I went to graduate school at night. And it was just the beginning of when the internet first started coming together. And I was getting my degree in interactive telecommunications. So as I was going to graduate school at night, as a very young lady, I tried again to try to get back into music. And at that point, I just cold called record companies. And I said I was a multimedia executive, even though I was only 23 and I was just hitting grad school. But I was lucky enough, someone took a chance on me, and I founded the music industry's first digital division at Sony Music, different version of Sony, many, many years ago. So from there, because I have a real background in technology and digital, from there, I realized that I needed to learn how to do branding and marketing and things that would generate money. So I switched over to media, and I worked at Condé Nast a couple since at Condé Nast. I worked at 17 Magazine, Spin Magazine. And what I was really good at is doing sort of multifaceted, multi-platform projects, things that, like, back in the day that would go from print to digital back to print again, and experiential tied in as well. And from there, I really sort of cut my chops in terms of learning how to do deals for artists and brands. That's kind of like a short version of my trajectory.
And now at Columbia Records, Sony Music, what do you do?
So at Sony Music, I'm SVP of Creative Content, and let's really ram partnerships and commercial licensing. So one part of my job is to do all the commercial licensing, meaning that whenever anybody wants to sync music, whether it's Pharrell, Beyonce, Adele, Lil Nas X, Harry Styles, they have to come through me. I'm the gatekeeper. Really interesting tidbit is we knew early on that the Kamala campaign was going to use the Beyonce track Freedom, because they hit us up that very day, the day after she received the nomination. That very day, we received a request: can they use that song? So it was pretty exciting. So yeah, kind of the gatekeeper for anybody that wants to use our music. We figure out pricing and licensing. I mean, it's incoming, but it's super important to do lots of outgoing. So I'm definitely measured on how many commercials or branded content pieces my music can go into. It's changed a lot lately because of TikTok, obviously. So music that used to be strictly, you'd license music to live in commercials. And commercials, as we all know, Katie, you're in advertising, the commercials sort of going down. The OTT might be going up, but the money is different. And so our big push now is to get as many pieces of our music and content in TikTok. So that's one part of my job. The other part of my job is brand partnerships. So putting together campaigns with our artists and brands.
So you have always been throughout your career on the cutting edge of things that are happening. That's not easy to do, especially when things are changing so quickly. You have any advice for people that are feeling overwhelmed because they feel like they can't keep up?
Yeah, I want to reference a little tiny story. When I was at Interscope, which was my position before this, when I worked for Jimmy Iovine, and I thought my job, the music industry is like this, where do I go? Like, no one tells you anything. No one gives you any direction. And you really have to figure things out on your own and be a self-starter. And when I was at Interscope, and I did something similar to what I'm doing now, but in a little less senior, and I was going about my business, trying to do deals, blah, blah, blah. And all of a sudden, one day I woke up and I realized that all he wants is music and commercials. That's all this guy wants. And I was doing everything not wrong, but I wasn't focusing on where Jimmy Iovine wanted me to focus. And so I really likened it to my team. I'm steering a huge cruise ship, and I have to turn it to follow the direction of culture. And that happened very recently here at Columbia Records. It happened probably right after Cannes, I think, this Cannes, because all anyone was talking about was creators, 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 creators. And I, all of a sudden, I think I'm really good at sort of reading the tea leaves and having cultural epiphanies, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, I came back to my team, I said, you know what? We have to stop chasing what we always did, which was to have relationships with creatives at agencies, because the business has shifted to music being selected by social and digital agencies, which are sometimes so small and you can't even find them because there are so many of them and influencer agencies. So I left Cannes with this new missive to my team to let's meet as many social and creative and influencer agencies as we can, because those are the ones making the decisions about music in advertising campaigns, which are kind of not advertising campaigns anymore. So my advice is to just like, you just have to be constantly looking and learning and growing, reading, meeting, and greeting. That's my advice. Like you have to just be so aware of everything that's happening all the time.
So in that same sort of vein, there's a lot of talk about personal branding and how important that is. You've helped so many artists brand themselves. But as a business leader, some people love the idea of branding themselves, but it's really difficult. How important do you think personal branding actually is if you're trying to make a name for yourself in the working world?
I think personal branding is very, very important. I don't think I do a good job of it or as much of it as one should. I think personal branding is great. I think it puts you, you know, top of mind for whether it's a new job or an opportunity or a speaking engagement, or I don't know, maybe you can get your own brand partnership type of thing. But I think that it helps, especially for women. I think it's very, very helpful to treat yourself as if you are your own brand.
Do you have any advice for how to do that?
My advice as to how one would personally brand themselves is to be just out there as many speaking engagements as you can. I think it's about a lot of social media, but done in a tasteful way. It can't be boastful. It has to be more pragmatic. I think another way to personally brand is something I do is mentoring. I think it's really important to mentor young women, men too. But I think the more that you can mentor and the more that you can give back in the workspace, the better it is for your personal brand. That's what I'm leaning into.
I'm trying to do that too. I love that you said that. And also, I love what you said about social and not being boastful, because if I go on LinkedIn and I read one more person say, you know, with a post that starts with, I'm thrilled to announce, I'm thrilled to, you know, it's just like, it's too much. But there is a balance, because you want to get it out there of what you're doing, but you know, don't use the word thrilled. That's my,
it's tricky. Yeah. Tricky. I've definitely said that. And I always think about what I can do. I have the luxury of being able to make it about the artist and not me. So I can brag all I want if I make the headline about so proud to be in the presence of XYZ artist as opposed to myself. So I have a little blanket I can hide underneath while I'm bragging.
Well, let me ask you about that, because you have worked and work with so many super famous artists. And I've spoken with a lot of my guests about imposter syndrome. I'm always really surprised to hear some of the most self-confident women that I speak with feel like they have it a lot or at times. And do you ever feel that imposter syndrome? And if you do, what do you do about it? And if you don't, what is the secret not to?
For me, I don't really have imposter syndrome as it relates to my abilities and being in a room and knowing how to do deals and knowing how to work with my artists and work with brands. I think sometimes ageism may play a role in terms of feeling like an imposter.
There's so much emphasis in the media, entertainment, and advertising industries on youth and to be and to look young. And it really can be very overwhelming. At the same time, there's a lot of value that comes with experience, which is what in many cases makes people so valuable at their job, is their life experience and their work experience. At the same time, you know, how do you balance that between being careful about your age and sharing your experience? Have you run into this tricky part?
Yes, I think that, you know, I think a really great way to balance I guess what would be thought of as ageism, and tapping into your experience is to have people around you that support, know, and, you know, like, I have a very young team and it's all women. They've been with me for a long time already. They've been with me for probably some of them 4 or 5 years, and they're much younger than me, but they know that I know my stuff, and I know they're always there to support me, and they're always there to listen to me, and they're constantly learning and growing. And I love to see, and I have a lot of women out there that used to work for me that I'm still very close with. And I know that if one were to ask them, you know, what's so great about Jennifer, they'd be like, well, Jennifer's got all this great experience. She knows what she's doing. She's very nurturing. She's very mentoring. She's tough, but, you know, you learn a lot, and she's super fair. And I think that one can balance your experience and your know-how with the, I think one is, if one is like fair and respected and has an amazing reputation, I think that goes, that will speak volumes and will go a long way in terms of combating the ageism, because I think sometimes what ageism means is like that they're out of touch, and you can't be out of touch, and you have to be well respected. And I think if you're not out of touch, as we were talking about earlier, a few moments ago, be constantly on the pulse, constantly following everything that's happening in your said industry, plus you've got a great reputation within the industry, then ageism kind of ends up not mattering in the end.
Yeah, I agree with you. At least I hope I agree with you. I think I agree with you. I want to agree with you.
What choice do we have? That's what it is, you know? Like, that's the only way to get around. I think it's the only way to get around. Let's see if other people have ideas.
So I mentioned before, you've had such a cool career, so incredible. And I've read a bunch of articles on you. And one of them, I read an article where it said, you think it's important to plan what you want to manifest in your life. Can you talk about that a little from a career perspective, please?
Yeah, I was not a big fan of manifesting, but I was sort of a naysayer. But I do believe very strongly that the more you do it, the more it works. And I always had a plan for myself. I always knew what I wanted to do from a career perspective. I wanted to, as I mentioned earlier, I wanted to work in music. I figured out a way to get in. I didn't get in a traditional way. I got in because I was a digital person, and I was one of five back in the day before anyone knew what digital was. I wanted to learn about brands. I wanted to learn about deals. I knew I had to leave the music industry and go somewhere where people were doing deals and selling things and doing like hybrid deals, as I mentioned. So I specifically planned to go into media because I really wanted to learn how to package and sell media. And then I wanted to go back into music, but in a completely different role. So I would always manifest. I would start with thinking about what do I want? And that's manifesting. First, you have to be super clear on what it is that you want. Like, I want this. I want to learn this, or I want to have this role. I was able to envision the roles for myself based on research. I mean, you start with research. You start by asking a lot of questions. Again, I think the theme of this chat is being on the pulse, knowing what's happening in your said industry, living, breathing it, reading everything you can read, going to as many events as you can, talking to as many people as you can. And once you really have that under your belt, then you think about, I really would like to do XYZ in XYZ industry. And going after it, but you need, so it's about research, thinking, planning, and then going after what it is.
I think that's great advice. I wanted to ask you something, and it's quite personal, but I think it's something that women can learn from, everyone can learn from. So during your career, you mentioned your late great husband, a terrible tragedy, and your husband passed away. When terrible things happen, nothing else matters. But at the same time, for many women, they still have to work. They have to go to work. Is there any advice that you can share about going through a very tragic and difficult time and still having to show up for work?
Yeah. I mean, I was thinking about that question this morning as well. And looking back on it, I am a different person now than I was when this happened 6 years ago. But I will say, Sony was an incredible organization to work for through all my grief. They were really there for me. I would say that, you know, the way I worked through this was through really leaning on amazing friends and family. A friend here at Sony, I didn't even know what I was doing. He said, Jen, what are you doing? You should take a leave of absence. It didn't even cross my mind. And I took a leave of, but it was a friend. You know what I mean? I had all this, I had so much support around me 24/7. And it also, my husband was a very famous man in the music industry. So he had a lot of allies and fans. And so I think you need to just lean into the people that are around you and listen to them. You don't want to listen. You don't even know what you want. Bring as many people into your life as you can. There were people that I didn't even return their calls for like a year, and they didn't leave me alone. They kept checking on me and checking on me and checking on me. And one to this day, a very dear friend of mine, every time I see him, I said, thank you so much for sticking with me and not, you know, not taking it personally that I wasn't getting back to you. So yeah, my advice is to really like almost like sometimes when I couldn't sleep, it was super personal. I even would list the people in my head that helped me. And there were hundreds of, like, you're supposed to say, if you can't think, if you can't sleep, count something. So I started counting the people that helped me, and there are hundreds of people. So I'm very lucky. I'm very blessed. I'm grateful that so many people cared so much about me, you know, many of them. So I think that's my advice, is if you're lucky enough to have a support system like I had, just like lay back and do that trust fall thing and let them embrace you and help you. And once you get through the initial shock and your, you know, let's say a year has passed, then you really, really, what helped me was really getting into work in a deep way, and really kind of giving it my all and going crazy in work. And that helped me too. And then also the last thing I'll say about this is that I do kind of like, when I meet new artists, I like sharing my story, because it is a, you know, it's a horrible part of me, but it's a part of me nonetheless. And my husband's a very important part of my life, and I want people to know about him. And actually, this is really cute. His name was Jeff. Like all my young ladies that work for me, they know Jeffisms, and I share his sayings and how he helped me with my career. And he lives on through all the women that I mentor to this day. Like they're still saying the things he used to say, his little expression. So.
Do you have a Jeffism you could share with us?
Yeah. He would say, one of them would be like, if you don't have any meat, you can't make a barbecue. Meaning that if you don't really have like the great, if you don't have the content to work with, you can't turn it into a campaign or a deal or a project. He would also say, my favorite is, it's a known one, but he used to say it all the time, and it's come into play very often with me and my team. Live as an island, die as an island, which comes into play very often when you're doing deals with artists. You can't just think that, oh, I have the relationship with the artist, I don't need to involve the rest of the record company. Ha ha. Yes, you do. Like I've fallen victim to that many times, think they're kind of like wild, wild westing it, thinking that I could do whatever I want. And because I have the relationship with the artist, no, you need to use everybody that at your disposal and everyone on your team. And you need to pull everybody into all the work that you do. So those are two Jeffisms.
Okay. So then I think it's a perfect place to end with a Jenism. Do you have one piece of advice which has really helped you in your life and your career that you could please share with us?
Couple of little ones as opposed to one big one. I have a few small ones. One is, if you see a hole, fill it, right? You find something that nobody's doing and nobody's working on, you should figure out how to fill that hole. You should figure out how to do something no one else is doing. Find a gray area, raise your hand, get it done, and then, you know, show everybody what you thought of. And another one, which is the opposite, is to sometimes let things fall. You don't have to be a hero. You don't have to solve every single puzzle. So the two are sort of like, you know, they juxtapose into each other. And I think that they work really well together. Like look for the right thing to fix and to do, but at the same time, you don't have to be a hero and you don't have to save the day every single time, because maybe sometimes things just shouldn't really come to fruition. They're not meant to.
Jen, that was amazing. Thank you so much.
Thank you.